Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the greats check, too, okay? Because we'll get the punch on third and short. Even 51 greats. Even 51 greats.
And the rest of the 2008 NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Welcome inside the playbook for a Wednesday on Patriots.com radio. My name is John Rook. Pat's getting set now to come back home. Well, they're already technically back home, but they're getting ready to play at home at Gillette Stadium for the first time in about a month when they face the Denver Broncos this next Monday night with the, 8:15, I guess, kickoff for Monday Night Football. And as always on Wednesdays, we welcome into the fray Michael Parenti from PFW. Mike, what's happening today?
Today, John, we have a couple of guys from PUP back in practice. Stephen Neal, Oliver Ross, the clock has started on them. So
yeah,
possibly getting some help on the offensive line. That's the big news out of Foxborough today.
Yeah, and I think that it even came up in yesterday's conversation as well. And I've said this all along. I thought that maybe the Patriots' offensive line inadequacies, shall we say, to this point in time of the season, has something to do with the fact that they miss a guy like Neal's presence on the offensive line because of the athleticism that he can bring. And I thought he was just kind of a glue guy anyway. You know, he didn't do, you know, any one or two things great, but the guys seem to be very comfortable with him. And we all know how valuable it is for an offensive line to be in sync. And when he is a part of that puzzle, I think this line is more in sync.
Well, the biggest thing, too, to me is that Stephen Neal's a very good run blocker, and they've had a hard time running the football, and that would be a big asset. And I think Billy Yates has done a nice job filling in, but I think at times when you have players who are primarily backups and you overexpose them, they eventually are going to hurt you. And I think that's the case in this situation right now. And I think Nick Kazier struggled at right tackle, and I'm not sure if a change is going to be made there, but he wasn't at practice today, so we haven't seen the injury report yet, so we'll kind of get some more information on that when that does come out. But Oliver Ross has a lot of experience in this league, and primarily the last 3 or 4 years playing right tackle. So I wouldn't be surprised, and Paul and I agreed on this, that if there's a wholesale change on the right side of the line come Monday night. It's a possibility.
You know what? And I think a lot of fans would probably welcome that. I certainly would.
Sure. I mean, the pass protection has been great, and they haven't run the football. So
no.
What they're doing now is not working. So perhaps this is a time for some change.
It's time to roll the dice and see if we can't get some other things in there. I totally agree with that. That's one thing that certainly I think that appears to be at this stage correctable barring injuries. Now, of course, there are other things that may not be as correctable, and I know there were several guys missing from the media portion of practice today, weren't there not?
Well, Kazier was one of them. Matt Light was not out there. Jarvis Green, in addition to that list, Kelly Washington, Eric Alexander, and I believe there's one more. I'm trying to find my list here. There were seven guys. They brought back Maurice Price on the practice squad.
Okay.
So there are some changes that are going to be made here. I'm not sure what the health status is of these linemen. We don't really see too much when they're out there, so we don't know yet until we get the injury report. But if Light or Kazier are hurt, you're going to have to make some changes at tackle and possibly switch some guys around.
Okay.
But it's mostly the usual suspects, too, John. I mean, Eric Alexander's been out for a while, and so is Kelly Washington. So, and now they bring back Maurice Price on the practice squad. I don't know if they make some kind of change there with Ben Jarvis Green Ellis at running back, if maybe they switch guys in the squad or what they do. It all depends. But the Lions situation, to me, is the biggest problem. That is what's frustrating the most, because you have a quarterback who's still trying to learn things here and try to get acclimated to the system and get acclimated to being a starter. And I don't think he is in the right frame of mind to be able to deal with inadequate pass protection.
Do we have any more info, or do you have any more insight on Lamont Jordan and or Lawrence Maroney at this stage?
Well, neither one of them are out there today. Now, the thing with Maroney is a very slippery slope. I'm not sure what is happening there. He talked about having some issues that he's dealing with, and he did say, no, it's not an injury. It's not the shoulder injury. So it leads us to believe there's something else going on with Lawrence Maroney, and we're not quite sure what it is.
Okay.
And he wasn't active, obviously, on Sunday night. And at this point, I would not be surprised if he's inactive on Monday as well. And Lamont Jordan, the situation there appears to be pretty serious as well. He's not out there on the practice field again today, at least during our availability at the start of practice. Did not play last week. So that's another dicey situation. They could be in a position where, once again, they go into a game and their running backs are Sammy Morris, Kevin Falk, and Ben Jarvis Green Ellis.
Right. I based on some of the things that I've read thus far, it was my at least impression that Maroney may not have even been in the locker room. Was he even in the locker room today?
No.
Okay. There's something else going on, isn't there?
I think so. I think we talked about it for quite a while at the end of PFW in progress, and a lot of things that we threw out there were confidence issues. You know, maybe he does feel that he's injured, and maybe the coaching staff's pushing him to get on the field, and he doesn't want to run, he doesn't want to play if he's hurt.
Yep.
We talked about the difference between being hurt and legitimately injured, and there is a difference, too. You know, a guy may have some pain, but is he injured and cannot play? There's a big difference, and we think maybe the coaching staff has questioned that with Maroney. Desire, confidence, you know, we don't really know, but there are issues, and that's what he has said. That's the word, issues. So you kind of have to take it for what it means, and I tend to think it's confidence. To me, personally, that there is an issue with his confidence. And, you know, maybe getting hurt so many times over the years, maybe he felt he was finally turning the corner, and then he comes into this season, he gets hurt right away. You know, maybe sometimes guys sit back and think, am I ever going to be healthy? Am I ever going to be able to contribute fully? And it kind of wears on you. I mean, we're only human. They're all human beings. You know, we tend to forget that at times. I know they're football players, and, you know, they're big, strong, professional athletes, but they are human beings, and they go through the same range of emotions that you and I go through.
Except they have to take the pounding that you and I don't have to take.
Mentally and physically, yes.
Yes, both ways. And I'm glad you pointed that out, because I think that's a fact that probably gets lost on a lot of people, Mike. It's the fact that there's much as much a mental as there is physical pounding on these guys. And frankly, this is what I've thought about Lawrence Maroney from almost day one. I had heard, you know, through, you know, my pro scouting contacts in the league that there was some concern when Lawrence Maroney came out of the University of Minnesota about his overall durability. There was no question he had great talent, great speed. He had the physical makeup to be an elite back in the NFL, but, and it was a rather large but in this particular instance, that they just – apparently it was either during you know, the testing or something during the combine or what have you that led people to believe that his psyche was fragile and that if something goes wrong, he's liable to get off the track. And I get this from a couple, not one, but two very good people who have a lot of inside knowledge on NFL scouting circles. And – from day one, I thought that this was going to be an iffy pick, it at best, for the Patriots. And I have to admit, I've been one of the people that's been hammering on Maroney the most. People who have listened to this program know that I've hammered on Maroney from the start, because I simply believe it's between his ears. And I'm just not convinced that there's an injury that should be serious enough to keep him off the field, and yet he seems to have convinced himself that to be the case.
Well, you know, I agree to some degree with you in the term that, yes, there is a lot going on between the years. But I also just wonder why we talk about the big thing with him physically is his inability to hit the hole hard and run straight ahead. And at times we criticize him for dancing back there and trying to make the big play all the time. So I don't know what the issue – I'm not sure how those two connect.
Yeah.
See, I still think even if he has some issues with confidence, then why isn't he changing his approach and staying away from what's clearly not working? So
yeah.
What is the connection there?
You know what?
And there are so many questions, and a lot of it's speculation, too. I mean,
it's all speculation.
That's why I feel
absolutely.
A slippery slope, because we really don't know exactly what it is.
And we should probably, in all honesty, we need to be as fair as we can possibly be to the guy, you know? So,
oh, sure, absolutely.
In this regard, you know, it's one thing to hammer him. At the same time, you know, hey, if he's hurt, well, then I guess we also need to point out he deserves the benefit of the doubt.
I mean, I have no problem coming out, John, saying, you know, he hasn't been on the field enough. That's a fact. And also, what's a fact is when he's been out there, he hasn't been as productive as we thought he would be.
That's very
true. Those are facts. The numbers don't lie, and the performance does not lie.
And you know, Michael, I think that's the biggest thing. I really think that if we and you know, we forget that he had, you know, three great games. What it was at the end of last year, at the end of the regular season, where I think we all felt like, you know, we were going to start to see Lawrence Maroney fulfill some of the potential that he had. But of course, the offensive line had an unbelievable year last year. They stayed relatively healthy. You got a guy like Brady at quarterback, who certainly is going to keep a defense honest.
Yes.
And so he had all the pieces of the puzzle working in his direction. Now that there's some adversity, it's not necessarily working in his direction. And maybe Maroney's just as fragile as some others. Maybe he needs everything to be perfect around him. And this is what I got from you know, a couple of my scout friends. He needs everything around him to be in perfect order. Otherwise, it's not going to work for you. And I think we're seeing that come to fruition this year.
And I also just wonder if he's capable of carrying the load as a number one running back.
I don't think
because he did
he
not
is.
Do it in college.
No, I,
he was
no,
a guy who split
not.
Carries.
That's right.
Is that the system that he could function in?
You know,
at the NFL level, that remains to be seen. We haven't seen him try. They have tried to make him the number one back, and it hasn't worked.
Right, right. The question then should be, what did the Patriots draft him as? Did they draft him to be a feature back? Did they draft him to be a number one guy, you know, a replacement, if you will, as we all thought for, you know, Corey Dillon? In effect, he is only going to thrive and flourish in a system where he can share the duties.
Right.
And I think that much we've learned through his two-plus years.
Well, if that's the case, then you should have had a backup plan to have somebody in there who could be a number two.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So in other words,
I think
it's
that's
a
one
big
of the reasons
risk.
Why I think they felt like they had that with Sammy Morris last year, and then of course he got hurt.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the reasons why they went after Lamont Jordan this year. So they could try, in effect, to have a solid 1-2, if not 3, punch.
Well, that's the thing. And I don't know if Sammy Morris or Lamont Jordan is the guy to be the number two, because I mean you're not just asking him to be a change of pace back, you're asking him to split carries.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot, you know, I would want somebody in Maroney's class. I would want somebody as young as Maroney, the same skill set, you know, like when he had Marion Barber next to him.
But that may not be as
hard gettable. To get two guys like that.
That's not gettable. I think you have to depend on the, you know, sometimes the traveled veteran that, you know, is looking for an opportunity to play, you know, for a winning organization, get in the playoffs, have a shot at a Super Bowl, that kind of thing. Follow the old, you know, Patriot mantra that they've done for the last several years, you know.
It's difficult, you know, and we talk so much about the running game in Maroney, but obviously on the other side of the ball, there are some major problems.
Big time, big time. And the first thing I wanted to ask you about was, you know, Delta O'Neal, the fact that he did actually speak to some members of the media over the last day or two, even though he apparently waved everybody off after the game on Sunday night.
Yeah.
So are you at all surprised that he's still with the team?
Well, no. I mean, they don't have a lot of other options right now. And
I
clearly,
I say go with the young guys.
Well, you know what? They put Wheatley out there, and he got beat on a 50-yard play, too. So, I mean, clearly there's a work in progress.
But wouldn't you rather hang your hat on the young guy than the guy like O'Neal, who's obviously seen his better days?
Well, I think it may just be more from a mental standpoint, a guy who understands the system better than the rookie does. And I think they're banking on that playing some sort of a factor. I think with O'Neal, I'm not surprised he's still here. I don't think I'd make a knee-jerk reaction after two games and cut the guy. But I think if this goes on any further, then yeah, he's not going to be in the lineup and he may not be on the team. But, you know, he did not talk Sunday. I was not in the home locker room, or I should say the visitors, actually. I was in the home locker room in the San Diego side.
Mm-hmm.
But Andy Hart, who was there, said he just looked dejected. He wasn't rude to the media saying, no, get on my face. He just says, no, I'm just not going to talk tonight. And he seemed really bummed out about the fact that he got beat.
Well, he should be bummed out.
Oh, absolutely. I would
be
too.
Bummed out too if
and,
I got
you know,
beat.
He,
like
he
that.
Talked today and he had a smile on his face and says, listen, he goes, you know, it was embarrassing and he feels embarrassed. And, you know, they asked him about the first play of the game. He says, that was a good call by them, you know, that's. And he says, hey, we expect to see more of it. You know, if teams
absolutely.
Now think that they can
yeah.
throw on us, they're going to yeah. keep throwing on us. And so,
absolutely.
You know, he obviously feels bad about what happened. And I think he said his teammates said to him, you know, look, it happens. It's one game. Keep your head up. It's not one game, but he made some, you know, he got beat on some plays in San Fran too. The difference is they won the game. You know, I need to see a little bit more. Sure. I mean, put him out there for another week and see what happens. See if he can kind of shut things down, but you can't go too much longer. I agree with you. I mean, at some point a change has to be made, but you wonder what is it about Terrence Wheatley and particularly Wheatley. I say Wheatley because I thought he was the guy who emerged out of camp as the option to start alongside Ellis Hobbs.
Mm-hmm.
What is it about him that they don't feel is better than O'Neal right now? There's, and I'm not saying they're right, but there has to be something they don't see. Not suggesting that they're right in that, but that's what they see clearly because he's not. And he just finally got out there for some defensive snaps, you know, Sunday in San Fran and then a little bit more against San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I thought when they cut, who was it now? Fernando Bryant,
mm-hmm.
that he was the guy. I thought Wheatley was the guy, and then all of a sudden it was Lewis Sanders in week one.
Yep.
And then, you know, they waited a week until O'Neal caught up with the rest of the players, and they put O'Neal out there. So, I mean, they clearly felt that they needed a veteran presence.
Well, even so, with O'Neal's struggles in the secondary, O'Neal becomes a better player if the Patriots are able to have a forward push. And I know that's been a point of contention as well, at least
yes.
recently. Fact is, they had no pressure at all on Phillip Rivers on Sunday night. We have since come to learn through what Coach Belichick has been talking about in his media conferences that wasn't necessarily the plan on Sunday. And I still have questions over that. I mean, this is what we do. We kind of second guess a lot. That's part of what it's all about here. But, you know, if their plan was to perhaps contain the run because they respected San Diego's run. You just can't let any quarterback in the NFL, I don't care what team you're working on, you can't let any quarterback have carte blanche time. They didn't even put a pressure, I didn't think, officially, on Phillip Rivers the entire night, and it allowed Vincent Jackson to have an all-pro day. And to me, that has to be one of the larger issues overall on this team, because if the offense is not going to score as much or with as much frequency as it did last year, then you've got to pick up the slack defensively, and we've already seen there are huge problems on that side of the football as well, and it starts with putting pressure on the quarterback.
I really did like the explanation yesterday about just focusing on stopping the run, because number one, since when do they just stick with one attack or one approach the entire game? They are known for switching things up. Number two, after about four or five deep bombs and the Chargers aren't running the football anymore, it's time to switch things up.
Yeah, no kidding.
Okay, it's time to make adjustments, which they did not do in this game or in the Miami game. Now, how many times do they have to get beat on the direct snap to Ronnie Brown before they made an adjustment? How many times do you have to get beat deep down the field in man coverage before you do something else? Yes, you took Tomlinson out of the game. Great. But you also gave up three touchdown passes to Phillip Rivers and several other long passing plays that set up scores.
Absolutely.
So that, to me, is not that's not a great explanation to me. And it kind of bothers me that you did not see any adjustments made, because that's what this team is known to do, to go in there at halftime or even on the sideline between drives and figure something out and make an adjustment.
And why are we not seeing these adjustments?
No idea, but a lot of that has to be put on the coaching staff, which we haven't done a lot of in years past. We very rarely have come out, because this team's always been successful, we haven't come out and said, listen, that falls on the coaching. There have been a couple of instances this season where I feel like the coaching has to be called into question. And the lack of adjustments in those particular games, those two losses, to me, is a legitimate point where now you can start to say, why weren't adjustments made somewhere along the line?
I would totally agree with you. Now, I don't know if you know this or not, but I'll ask it anyway. Do you know what the pecking order is in terms of the adjustments? Does that come straight from Coach Belichick? Does Dean Pease have input? Does he get inputs first from
his assistants? No, I think there's input from everybody. I mean, the coordinators are able to run their own show, but obviously Bill has the final say. But we've seen, and as we saw in the telecast, you know, Josh McDaniels and Bill Belichick were going back and forth, walking off the field, and I don't think it was an argument, right? I think they were just sort of talking about what to do. I mean, obviously his input counts. Now, to what degree, I don't know, but somebody has to do it. I mean, the adjustment has to be made somewhere. And when Bill comes out every time after a loss and says, you know, it's on us to coach better, that's everybody.
Yeah.
It's not just one guy. It's everybody.
Yeah. Well, I think that certainly is something that will be very, very large to watch on Monday night. Find out how this team, if they need to, how they go about making in-game adjustments, because I have not seen one. I cannot think of one in-game adjustment, frankly, that they've made, especially in the two losses, because the two losses have been so overwhelming.
I agree. And you know something, too? This is going to be tough Monday, because this is a team that also likes to pass and throw deep.
Exactly.
And we're probably going to see more of the same. Now, I wonder if they'll come out, and I'm talking about New England, if they'll come out with a different game plan defensively, maybe similar to what they did in San Francisco with a lot of various nickel packages, where they were able to generate pressure on JT O'Sullivan, chase him out of the pocket, make him throw on the run, make him run for his life.
And try to make Cutler do the same.
Right. Now, the thing is, and we all agree with this on the show, is that Cutler can probably make more of those throws than JT O'Sullivan can. I mean, clearly I would say a much better quarterback.
Yeah. Oh, you know what? Before I forget, in terms of the pass rush, the other guy I think that we didn't mention in terms of not a practice was Jarvis Green. Was that the one you were looking for, or did you mention him?
I mentioned Jarvis Green, yes.
Okay.
I actually, ironically, forgot the running backs, even though we talked about them.
Oh, yeah, Jordan and Maroney. Okay.
Right.
So do we happen to know, by any chance, I mean, you know, I know how guys talk, but do we know anything more about Jarvis Green other than the fact that, you know, when he was taken off the field or when he went off the field Sunday, he did not come back into the game?
Yeah, that's all I know, to be honest with you. So he hasn't been in the locker room, so we haven't had a chance to ask or to talk to him about that. So.
If he's done for a while, I think that's a huge loss for this
team. Well, it's tough because they came out and played a lot of 4-3 early in that game on Sunday, and when Green went down, it kind of limits how much 4-3 you can really play. They'd rather have him out there in a four-man front than Mike Wright.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of limits what you do defensively as well. But I just think adjustments have to be made across the board. And I think maybe you might see more cover two, probably more zone than we saw on Sunday night. And hopefully, to some degree, more of a pass rush. And however they generate that is fine. But to come into the game and say we're going to take away one thing, well, you can take away one thing, but if that one thing, you know, isn't what's beating you, then you have to try to stop what's beating you. Now, in this particular game, we'll probably see them try to take away the pass because the Broncos don't run the ball like they used to. You know, the, Michael Pittman had a 100-yard game finally last Sunday, and they still lost to Jacksonville. So this is a predominantly throwing team, as Bill pointed out. Today. He says, you know, yeah, they probably throw more than they did when we saw them 2 years ago.
Right.
Which is obviously is a safe assumption. So, you know, I think you're going to see some change in that regard.
All right. What's your overall then feeling of this team, Mike, after, you know, the 6 weeks, five games that they've played, and obviously two crushing losses, they weren't even close, and, you know, some wins that, you know, even were questionable in their own right. Does this team have an identity yet, or do you think it'll ever get one?
It does not have an identity, and I don't know when it's going to get one. It's going to take some sort of winning streak of some sort where they do one thing successfully and they're able to use that to lead them to victory. Now, let's say they can come out and maybe they get their running game established again and they win 3 out of 4. Then you can say you have some kind of an identity as a hard-nosed, you know, pound-the-football running team. Or perhaps Matt Castle gets more comfortable with the deep ball and they're able to reestablish that. Then you can say that's what we are. But right now they can't say what they are because they've been so up and down. Coming off a great win in San Fran, then going out and losing by 20 points to the Chargers.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been way too inconsistent. So I think this team is still trying to find its identity. And I think, like, you know, Andy and Paul and all the guys said today, they're accentuating the positives of what they do well in an effort to try to build some kind of identity.
Right.
And it's hard. You know, it's, you know, you always say you don't really know a lot about a team until after a few games. Well, we've had five and we still really don't know yet.
Yeah,
and that's and at some point, you know, you get to 10 or 11 games and you don't have an identity, you're probably never going to get one at that point. I would say there's a cutoff point somewhere.
I know that Coach Belichick mentioned yesterday that the thought of a trade for the Patriots was highly unlikely yesterday, and that
yes.
obviously proved to be the case. There were two trades in the NFL made. The Cowboys got Roy Williams from the Lions, and the Colts got John McCargo from the Bills, which I thought was a little surprising, but, hey, good for the Colts. And to that end, was there a spot or a player that you thought the Patriots might have been able to help themselves with through a trade had they pulled the trigger?
Well, I'd probably say they would have needed some secondary help, but I don't think there was anybody out there really because the Cowboys could use some help in the secondary as well, and they went out and they got Roy Williams.
Right.
So I thought that was
Cowboys
kind of a strange trade.
They're just going to try to outscore people.
Well, I think that's what they're going to have to do.
Yeah.
But it's going to be hard now. They're bringing in Roy Williams, and he's not even going to get to work with the quarterback that he may see for the next five,
yeah,
6 years
true.
Until another month. So that's kind of a dicey situation to me too. Plus, he kind of comes from that same mold of being the prima donna receiver that they seem to have a lot of already. So it'd be an interesting locker room to be hanging around in as well. It really is, though, John. I mean, and they don't really – I don't like to say you don't need receiver help. It's like saying you have enough pitching, which nobody ever has enough pitching. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think the Red Sox are showing that.
Yeah, as of right now, sure they are. But, you know, you can never have enough you can never have enough offense too, John. But at the same time, when your biggest deficiency is in the secondary, which it is for Dallas right now, I would like to think they could have gotten somebody to help out there. And if I'm the Patriots, I would have done the same thing. But, you know, they probably didn't see anything they liked and weren't willing to deal with draft picks. So that's really all we have to go by, really.
Right. The issue of Matt Castle at quarterback still seems to come up from a lot of fans, and I know you guys get a lot of questions. And
oh, my God.
I get questions as well, and my whole – most of the show yesterday had to deal with Castle's not the problem right now. There are many other things, defensive line, defensive backfield, running backs, offensive line, I think, frankly, that come before Matt Castle. And yet Coach Belichick felt compelled to again say – that Matt is his quarterback. Why do you think that is?
Because he's the best option. I don't see any reason why Kevin O'Connell would be a better option right now than Matt Castle. Now, people point back to Castle and not having any experience in college, and I understand that. And, yes, Kevin O'Connell was a four-year starter.
Yep.
Fine. But Matt Castle took all the reps of the first team in training camp and preseason this year. He's more experienced with this offense. Forget the college offense because that's irrelevant now. Matt Castle's more experienced with this offense and this system. He's the better option. You put O'Connell in there, and listen, Castle's biggest problem is in the red zone, okay? He's indecisive. He does not see the play break down quickly enough, and you have to be able to do that in the red zone because, number one, you don't have a lot of time. Number two, the space is limited. You're now jamming 22 guys into a 20-yard space, okay? And when you're at the one-yard line, you're pretty much jamming them into a 10-yard space in the end zone.
Right.
Not a lot of room to maneuver. You've got to make real quick, real intelligent decisions. And that comes with experience, which Castle does not have. Well, neither does O'Connell. So why would it be any better? You know, the assumption that, well, O'Connell can run a little bit. Well, he can run a little bit. Castle can run, too. But he tucks the ball, and you know, he doesn't seem to get anywhere when he runs the football. So I just don't see where O'Connell is going to help at this point. I think if you put in O'Connell now, you're starting from ground zero again. Now you're risking another two or three games to get this guy acclimated.
Yeah, I'm right there with you on this one. I think if you put O'Connell in now, then basically what you've done is you've thrown in the towel on the season.
Yeah, you said we've given up. We're just going to develop some young kid who, in all fairness, is probably the future of the backup position here, because I don't think Castle comes back one way or the other.
No,
he's going to have played. By the end of the season, he'll most likely have started 15 games for this team, will probably get a contract somewhere, and he'll go off and play where he can start.
Right. Or at least have an opportunity.
Which obviously you didn't have here until Brady went down.
That's correct.
And O'Connell, to me, is a guy they're grooming as a backup, and maybe someday the replacement.
An eventual replacement.
For Tom Brady.
We don't know. Yeah. Who knows how long Tom Brady has left?
Now, hey, listen, you want to put him in there in a blowout? That's fine. I mean, maybe he could have played a series on Sunday night against San Diego. Mm-hmm. You know, it was 30-10. But I'm not putting him in there in the second quarter. I'm not entertaining any thoughts about making him the red zone quarterback. Now, first of all, you come out and you say Matt Castle's your quarterback, but you know what? You get us down to the one, and we'll just let somebody else take over from here. That doesn't help anybody's confidence. That's not a good idea whatsoever. This is not like the running back situation like in Pittsburgh a few years back when they had Willie Parker go between the one and the one, but at the one, it's Jerome Bettis's ball, and he pounds it in for the touchdown. O'Connell's not a better red zone option. He's less experienced. It would probably be a disaster.
Webradio@patriots.com is the email address if you'd like to jump into the conversation, if you have some questions on some of the aforementioned topics that Michael Perini from Patriots Football Weekly and I have already entertained. A lot of other things to get to today, including in the 3 o'clock hour, Ron Jaworski from ESPN and Monday Night Football, and he'll give us his viewpoints not only on the Patriots as they presently stand. And, you know, here's a guy, Mike, that looks at an awful lot of video, a lot of tape, a lot of film. He does his film work perhaps as well as any analyst in the game, and he'll be a part of the broadcast crew here at Gillette next Monday night. And frankly, I can't wait to ask him what he sees about Matt Castle, because I would think that if anybody could break the guy down and tell us what he likes and what he doesn't like, it's probably a guy like Jaworski.
Oh, surely. A former quarterback would be a guy who would understand that situation, and Jaws is one of the best two in the business, obviously. I mean, you've seen his work on Monday Night Football.
In fact, I think there are a lot of fans that would probably say more Jaws, less Tony.
Probably, yeah. He obviously brings. I mean, I think Kornheiser brings sort of a maybe comic relief. He's more like,
yeah. And you know what? I actually like Tony Kornheiser.
He's not bad. I mean, it's just like he's kind of Captain Obvious.
He's Captain Obvious at times. He's an acquired taste, and I happen to like his radio talk shows in the years because they're somewhat irreverent. He's not trying to be a football analyst.
No.
He's trying to not be as bad as a guy like Miller was. And he's trying to be at least as good as, a Frank Gifford was. I mean, he's trying to find a niche. He's trying to find a mix. And I'm not sure that he's found it. I'm not even sure that he can find it. But Tony needs to be still himself and portray some of his radio personality and his newspaper column personality on the television broadcast. And I think he's struggled largely in trying to do that.
You're right about that, because he does seem like a different person on PTI than he is on Monday Night Football.
Yeah, there's no
clear difference.
If he could be more of a PTI type guy on Monday Night Football, I think people would appreciate him and probably have more fun with him.
And it would be a lot like having Joe Theismann in there, who would get into arguments.
Yeah, that's who I was trying to think of.
And sort of spark the fire a bit and maybe get a back and forth going, especially during a game that's a blowout.
Right.
And you don't really want to share the play-by-play. Get something going.
Yeah, I don't think he's willing to get into the fight or into the argument with Jaws or Tirico, and I think that's part of the problem.
It's probably a good idea, because Jaws knows his stuff.
He does, but there's no reason why you can't engage him in
a
conversation and challenge him on a couple of things that he might say.
He adds a lot to the show, Jaws, and obviously from the football analytical standpoint, he really tells you things that you don't always know, and he sees things that we don't always see from watching the film.
Absolutely.
And that's the best kind of analysis you can have.
All right, let's take a break here, then we'll come back, and if we've got some emails left over from PFW, we'll get to some of those. Also, like I said, if you'd like to jump into the conversation, webradio@patriots.com is the email address. That's where you get us. You know, we've already kind of touched on some of the concerns that we think are very obvious with this football team. What's the greatest concern in your mind where the Patriots are right now after 6 weeks, five games that they play. Is it the quarterback? Is it the O-line? Is it the D-line? Is it the defensive backs? Is it the linebacking core? Is it the coaching staff? And I got a question that I'm going to ask Mike specifically about the coaching staff in just a couple of moments as we continue right here inside the playbook.
We know you have a busy day ahead of you, and mornings are always tough to get through. So stop by your local Dunkin' Donuts today and grab a freshly ground, freshly brewed Dunkin' Donuts coffee. It's the perfect thing to get you going in the morning. Dunkin' Donuts coffee is made with real Arabica beans, which give it that rich flavor everybody loves. And while you're there, try the new egg white flatbread sandwich from the new DD Smart Menu. Choose from two delicious varieties, turkey sausage or veggie. Both served on multi-grain bread. With under 300 calories, you can now make a smarter choice for breakfast. So, stop into your local Dunkin' Donuts today and try one with a medium hot coffee for only $3.99. Price and participation may vary, plus applicable taxes. Limited time offer.
What do I love at Qdoba Mexican Grill?
I love this Qdoba Catering.
If you've got a group of folks to feed, Qdoba Catering is totally the way to go.
You've got the hot taco bar.
The hot nacho bar.
The hot naked burrito bar.
Did I mention that they're hot?
I make the phone call and they take care of everything.
People come and they
just help themselves.
They come with everything you need to feed a group of hungry people.
Marinated grilled chicken and beef.
Three kinds of salsa.
Fresh lettuce.
Guacamole.
Cookies and
brownies.
Homemade tortilla chips.
Everything.
But we get Qdoba Catering for all kinds of different occasions.
Tailgate parties.
Soccer games.
Birthday parties.
Baby shower. For my son's graduation. Party. It's perfect for office meetings.
You open the door to the conference room, you get the smell of Qdoba.
Hot bars are totally unique.
It's incredible. People love it. It's fresh.
Affordable.
That's the easy way to plan a party.
That's what I love about Qdoba Mexican Grill.
That's what I love about Qdoba Catering.
Have a group to feed? Order a hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering and give them food they'll never forget. What are you going to love at Qdoba?
Big games mean big parties. Feed 20 or more of your friends with a Qdoba hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering. It's fast, fresh, and budget-friendly. Now with 16 Massachusetts locations, opening September at Patriot Place in Kenmore Square. Full menu available at Qdoba.com.
The New England Revolution wins Superliga on home turf.
With the Superliga championship in the history books, the Revs are making another run in an MLS Cup championship. Don't miss their playoff push at Gillette Stadium with the Budweiser Quest for the Cup 2-pack. With the Budweiser Quest for the Cup 2-pack, you'll get two tickets to one of the Revs' final matches of the season and a pair of Budweiser Revolution pint glasses free. That's two tickets, two pint glasses, and one chance to cheer on the Revolution at Gillette Stadium with playoff implications on the line. Budweiser Quest for the Cup 2-pack start at just $38. Take in a Revs match, and you'll take home a matching pair of Revolution pint glasses free. Must be 21 or older to participate. Call the Revolution ticket office at 1-877-GET-REVS or log on to revolutionsoccer.net for tickets, game information, and everything else New England Revolution.
What a goal! Taylor 12 and
pride.
The sellout crowd in Foxborough rises to their feet.
Passion.
Oh my goodness! Michael Parkhorst, are you kidding me?
Revolution.
Well, it's that time of year again where Sunday means you're doing something football. Whether it's tailgating in the parking lot, throwing the pigskin around, or just hanging in and watching the game on the tube, it's all about football. And when you're not watching football or playing football, well, I think we both know you're thinking football. And all that can make you a little hungry. That's why there's the tasty snack wrap from McDonald's. Snack wraps now come in your choice of three flavors. New Chipotle barbecue, honey mustard, and ranch. And they're available with grilled or crispy chicken. Delicious and easy to eat. It's the perfect game time snack. So grab one today. And when you do, if you're looking at that chicken select and it kind of reminds you of a quarterback in the middle of the pocket, except now he's surrounded by cheddar jack cheese, ranch sauce, and lettuce, well, maybe you're thinking just a little too much about football. McDonald's. I'm loving it.
When you've got a lineman-size hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, First Down Franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers, mile and hot sack attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down franks and more. Patriots gridiron grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine and Associate Grocers of New England and CNS Wholesale. Patriots gridiron grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
Welcome back inside Patriots Playbook for Wednesday. I think this is probably an appropriate theme song because it does seem like the boys have been away for quite a while, about a month or so, and then, of course, the Patriots return to action Monday Night Football against the Denver Broncos at Gillette Stadium. Mike, does it seem like it's been longer than a month? Why is it just because maybe of the travel out west, you think?
Yeah, I guess that's part of it. I mean, it was a long trip out there, and I know it only seems like, you know, it's not a big deal because it was only 10 days, but you do kind of get sick of staring at the same hotel walls after a while. And this was kind of unprecedented, John. I don't think this team has ever done anything like this in its history before. So to have to stay out somewhere, you know, and not, I'm not talking about the Super Bowl week where stay out, but, you know, in between games like this.
Yeah, where, an in-season type of thing.
Right, where it's just a whole different kind of environment. You know, I think the trip worked out well. I know they lost the game on Sunday, but I don't think that staying out there for the week was any sort of excuse for losing that football game.
I'd have to say, at least on the surface. Yeah, I'd have to say on the surface that I think it'd be very difficult to pin that as a problem. Although, you know, I have heard from some of the players, you know, they're glad to be back home, that, you know, the jet lag is, you know, caught up with them a little bit. And, you know, so it's taken them a little while to get back into a groove. And so I would suggest that having the Monday night game coming back from the West Coast trip for 2 weeks, as it is probably a blessing in disguise.
Yeah, that extra day will definitely help. You know, it's an extra day of rest, an extra day of preparation. So it always is good to get back. And you have that long flight home on Sunday and you're kind of weary-eyed on Monday morning, at least knowing that you have the full week and you don't have to play again until Monday, probably makes a big difference.
You know, so much has been said about, you know, the problems that this team has had, and rarely do we get a chance to really examine some of the coaching duties in an effort to try to sort of right the ship, because, frankly, there hasn't been a lot to question in the last few years.
Right.
So that's why we haven't questioned that. And the one name that really has come to mind, and I've had a couple of friends of mine, and I don't know that whether they listen to the show or not, but, you know, this is just, you know, talking as guys talk, have asked me about Dom Capers. Now, obviously, he came to this team in the offseason having NFL head coaching experience. He became available. Coach Belichick offered him a gig, knowing that, you know, perhaps the secondary was going to be an Achilles heel. I think we've seen that, yeah, that is the case this year. So I'm curious, at least to this short stage of the season, we're basically only a third of the way through the year, if, of course, you kind of throw the playoffs in there. So in this regard, what do you think the impact of Dom Capers has been on this team? Have you seen any tangible evidence that he has helped?
No, and I don't think that's because he hasn't done the job. I don't think he has the great personnel to work with. He doesn't have an Asante Samuel, and he obviously has some question marks and a lack of depth in the secondary. That's been the biggest issue to me. I think there was obviously a big transition when Asante Samuel left. We assumed Ellis Hobbs would have to step in and take over as a number one, and he has by default been the number one. But we weren't sure what they're going to do on the other side, and they obviously haven't found the solution there yet either, because Delth O'Neill has not gotten it done the last 2 weeks. And we haven't seen enough from Terrence Wheatley or Jonathan Wilhite to assume that they could just step in now and take over as full-time starters. I think his impact would have been minimal anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's only the secondary coach. I know he's had a lot of head coaching experience, but I'm not sure what people were expecting when they brought in Dom Capers, unless he's brought in to be the head coach. You know, what really is his impact going to be as the secondary coach?
Well, I guess that's really where I kind of got the questions from, because it's kind of like, well, why would they bring a guy in like that if they didn't think he could have a positive impact on whoever it was that he was working with? And obviously, we haven't seen really any kind of an impact. And I think, and my answer actually to my friend was, well, you got to have talent first. And I just don't think the Patriots have the horses positions.
But you know what, too? They've gotten a lot out of some of those guys at various points this season. I mean, Ellis Hobbs did get off to a good start this year.
Certainly.
And we have seen some improvements in certain areas. Obviously, the last couple of weeks, it's looked bad. It looked bad against Miami as well. But, I mean, that to me is predicated on the pass rush. See, I don't know what we're going to ask of Capers, and we always talk about this defense this year. You know, the pass rush has to be great to take some heat off the secondary.
Right.
Well, it's not doing that. So now we're putting all the blame on the secondary. Well, you can't. Blame this front seven that's not getting after the quarterback.
Yeah.
Whether it's by design or just by lack of performance, the bottom line is, in two games, in the two losses, the opposing quarterback did not get touched.
He didn't get sacked, let alone get touched. That is a constant. That's true. In either game, neither quarterback got touched. That's true. Now, of course, this last week in San Diego, for most of the game, team went with an extra defensive back and really lined up with only a couple of linebackers.
Right.
Because a guy like Teddy Bruschi wasn't in there near as much as people think he was.
No, and they're trying to work with the speed lineup, and that's why you don't see a lot of guys like Bruschi out there at all times now. They understand that they have faster players. And they're trying to put that faster lineup on the field to stop a guy like LT, which they did do, but they did not stop the passing game. And that's the problem. And Phillip Rivers afterwards said, I was clean all night. And he was.
Yeah.
I don't think the uniform even needs to be washed.
Right. What's a reasonable expectation of a coach like Capers, do you think, someone with his experience and his ability?
I would say work with the young guys, because I'm not sure how much you can do to help an Ellis Hobbs or a Rodney Harrison, who's been in the league now.
Or a Delta O'Neal.
Or even Adeltha O'Neal, who I just think it's not mental with Adeltha O'Neal. Physically, he's probably deteriorated at some point. I mean, he was a first-round draft pick years ago by the Broncos and just never really lived up to that billing as a number one cornerback. He's had a couple of Pro Bowl seasons, but I would say I wouldn't say he's a bust, but I think he has played throughout his career far below the expectations that were set for him when he came out of college.
Mm-hmm.
With that said, I think Dom Capers' biggest impact would be working with guys like Terrence Wheatley and Jonathan Wilhite and even a James Sanders. Now, I will admit that I've been a little bit down on James Sanders. I think he's taken some bad routes on balls, and he was the guy playing deep on a lot of those long passes. They brought up Harrison to the line of scrimmage and left one safety back there, and it didn't really work out too well with Sanders. So I've been down on him a bit. So if you want to pin some of that on Capers, okay, that's fair. You can say that Sanders hasn't quite developed and maybe working with a veteran coach should. But Ellis Hobbs gave Capers a lot of credit, you know, around week three or four.
Okay.
And I did a piece on Ellis Hobbs and his quick start. And he credited Capers with a lot of things of helping him change some of his practice routines.
Mm-hmm. And was maybe, he specific with anything?
He said kind of just being – he kind of alluded to the fact that he's a little bit more serious about practice. Now,
interesting.
Yeah, just taking it more seriously, going after every play. And maybe that's where Capers' impact really is just – and maybe it's part of that head coaching mentality where you're really trying to fire guys up mentally as much as you are physically.
Hmm. Interesting. How about let's flip it to the other side? And have you seen any growth, even though it's been a little bit more of a struggle this year, from a guy like Josh McDaniels?
No, and I think the problem is he doesn't have the horses right now.
Okay.
That's the bottom line. He does not have his quarterback. I mean, this guy made some major steps last year, I would say, in terms of growth. I mean, this offense set records. So it's not fair to sit here and blame him for everything that's gone wrong this year but not give him some of the credit for what happened last year. It's not fair. You can't have it both ways.
Right.
So I don't think right now it hasn't been too creative at times. I will admit that. Okay, and I think they're still trying to find their identity and figure out what they have with Castle before they can really open the playbook and get back to what they did last year. I think they've been a little bit conservative at times. We had some questions about the red zone play, and particularly at the start of the third quarter on Sunday, where Randy Moss was not on the field for any of those four plays,
mm-hmm.
which is a little bit curious, and you wonder what kind of went into the thought process with that one.
And the answer was?
Well, we don't know. We don't get to talk to Josh McDaniels until, you know, Fridays, really.
Okay.
So maybe we can find out.
Will you be asking him that?
Well,
and does he have the direct input in terms of personnel groupings like that?
I think he does have a lot of say in it, yes. I certainly do think that I would put some of that on him, certainly. The reason why Moss wasn't in there, I'm assuming a lot of that was his decision.
Interesting. I just, you know, I would think that he would have some input, but I would think the final call on that wouldn't necessarily come from him.
No, but if Bill trusts him, says, well, all right, this is what you want to do, this is what we're going to do.
I think that's one of the most bizarre things, though, that I've seen all year, is how do you not have Randy Moss in a red zone offensive situation when, you know, you struggle to begin with in that place.
I just think in terms of delegating authority, I think it depends on the play, too. There may be a certain point in the game where he says, well, I'll we really need to do this, if this is important. Yeah, I don't think it's every play that, you know, or they choose the number of plays where McDaniel will get to call them himself or vice versa. I don't think it works that way. I just think it depends on the flow of the game at that point. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, at that point, I think maybe they just, for whatever reason, felt Moss shouldn't be out there. I can't explain it either, John. I really don't know.
I wonder if their heated discussion might have anything to do with that. I mean,
I don't know. I mean, but it's funny because they had that discussion walking off the field,
yeah.
And then in their first drive, they come out and they lay an egg in the red zone. So that, it is kind of ironic.
Yeah, it's very, very.
You wonder if there's any connection there, you know?
I believe me, the thought has crossed my mind a couple of times, you know, in the interim. I don't know, kind of getting off to a little bit of a different subject here, though, but I don't know if you saw this, but I saw a story, I think it was originally Sunday. It was at the start of the NFL meetings that were going on in St. Petersburg, Florida. And I know that it's ended. I saw a story hit the wire about Commissioner Roger Goodell coming up with the idea of, or somebody came up with the idea and pitched it for a spring game or scrimmage. Did you hear anything about that?
Briefly, can you run it by me again? What was that about?
Well, here's the story, and I've kind of cherry picked it here just because you know it kind of ponies on the whole popular college concept of having a spring game, and I think we all realize that in the last 4 or 5 years that at a few major high Division I powerhouse universities they're attracting tens of thousands of fans to a spring football game, which is a controlled scrimmage pretty much. Anyway, the story was that Goodell, his quote coming out of St. Petersburg, Florida, was the issue was raised by a few clubs more in the context of what the colleges do with a spring game. It could be in the form of the scrimmage too. It was just an interesting concept, and it has been raised before. He went on to say that there were no parameters set. The idea is going to get consideration in the future. It could include a spring preseason game or games, or maybe a scrimmage between two teams or an intra-squad type of scrimmage. But it would probably come in conjunction with an adjustment in either the preseason or the regular season schedule, which we know has been discussed quite a bit over the course of the last year or two. And again, after this last preseason, it reared its ugly head again, that we have way too much bad football as it is with four preseason games, and it's time to consider shortening it as well.
Well, how would adding a scrimmage take away from the bad football of the preseason?
I'm not sure.
Now, when would this scrimmage be?
Again, they did not say. They didn't.
I mean, are they talking like March or April? Because guys aren't ready by then.
Well, I would say that's certainly the point. You have to give the guys, at least some opportunity to, come down off of the season and have an off season. But here's the thing: usually around, the draft time in April, teams do hold, mini camps for rookies.
Well, that's just rookies. The actual veterans don't report to the mini.
Teams also hold passing camps and things like that. Usually in May, do they not?
Yeah, but there's not a lot of game planning done then, or not a lot of installation of the system. So that's kind of the problem. So you're going to have guys flying out there with their,
Well, I'm thinking then if they decide, and again, yeah, absolutely, but here's what I'm thinking. If they decide to shorten the preseason, the coaches then use this idea of a spring scrimmage to introduce, team concepts, playbooks, things like that, to their younger players. You bring the veterans in anyway for usually an early May camp, mostly, even if it's just for a couple of days. And I don't know that you would actually play a game against another team, but I could certainly see an intra-squad type of scrimmage thing, happening where, and here's the big pie in the sky, Michael, so where the owners could make a sort of a fan fest type of thing out of it and create more revenue.
Isn't that called training camp? I mean, they have sort of 11-on-11 drills during camp a lot of times.
Yep.
They charge people money to pay for
concessions. Some teams still do not do that. The Patriots do that. Some team, not all 32 teams in the NFL do what the Patriots do for training camp.
Well, concessions?
Some teams still sequester themselves, in a college university and basically don't care flip one about the public.
I don't like the idea. I think they're trying too hard to appease everybody here. And I don't really see the benefit of playing a scrimmage in April or May.
Well, keep in mind now that this was brought up by some teams.
Yeah.
This did not generate from the NFL. This was generated
I'm not sure what they're thinking there. I don't know.
Well, this was generated by some of the teams looking at, further marketing opportunities, sensing that they may lose a preseason opportunity.
Just add an additional camp in springtime and then shorten training camp in July. I mean, it seems like they're trying to find a way to spread things out.
Well, in effect, I think that's what they're talking about doing. I think
that's fine then, but if you're going to have everybody report to camp the same day and have the same day of same number of two-a-days and everything, and then you're going to have a scrimmage in May on top of it. I don't know. I think that's a little too much.
You don't think, though, with the overall NFL popularity as it is around the globe, that a spring scrimmage or a spring spectacular or event of some kind, or maybe you you put in some kind of a musical event or entertainment event around it, you don't think that fans would go for that?
Oh, I think it'll make a lot of money. I don't deny that.
Well, okay, well, that was my whole point.
Right, yeah, but I don't think it's in the best interest of the players. That's my point.
Well,
I think you're just opening up the door to more injuries.
Well, I think maybe not, especially if you shorten the preseason. If you shorten the preseason, then you're going to have less time to evaluate your rosters. You're going to have less time to evaluate your younger players. So if you're going to shorten the preseason, doesn't it stand to include that coaches still need the same amount of time? What you're doing then is you're basically taking a week or maybe a few extra days from training camp in July or early August, and you're lopping that off and you're putting it on in May.
Well, that's debatable if you're bringing in guys earlier without the benefit of having any sort of passing camp or off-season workout program. If you're doing this in, say, April, a lot of guys are on the couch until May.
Well, that's why I'm saying May. I mean, you'd have to do this after the NFL draft. There's no way you could do it, in a true spring sense, because colleges do it, right around that mid part of April. That's usually when their 1 week of spring practice is, and there's no way you could do it before the draft because it absolutely would be stupid for the NFL to do it before the draft because the whole idea would be to get their rookies involved and get them, try to get them up to speed.
Now, normally I'd say do away with minicamp in June, but a lot of that is the installation part of it.
Maybe you find a way to
the installation part.
Yeah, maybe you find a way then to combine a passing camp with a mini camp in June, and you move it, say, to mid to late May, around Memorial Day weekend even, and make that the quote-unquote spring event,
right,
where, again, you're combining, you're actually just rearranging the calendar under the guise of, creating more opportunity for younger players and also appeasing those who are saying we have too much bad football in the summertime already anyway.
I just think that, and I agree, you do make a good point there, but I also think that all those camps and all those off-season programs have a purpose. And I think
Nothing would be going by the wayside. You'd only be changing the calendar date and putting it all under the hat of spring football.
Well, as long as all 32 teams are playing by those same rules, then you really can't argue. You can't give teams advantages over others. I mean, everybody would have to participate in this scrimmage thing, and it'd have to be universal. Otherwise, you're going to get into competitive balance issues.
And,
fairness and all that crap. So I mean, it just opens up a big Pandora's box to me, and so I just wonder if it's really worth the trouble.
On the surface, no, because I think the colleges have a kind of a neat little niche with that. But at the same time, though, nothing surprises me when it comes to the marketing arm of the NFL.
That's true, too. Absolutely. I know.
So I just I tossed it out there because I thought it was an interesting story. And I said, I can't believe this thing actually has some legs. But apparently it does, and apparently it's going to continue to get conversation going in amongst the teams. Now, Roger Goodell also said coming out of Florida that the scheduling for 2009 is not going to change, which means we're still going to have four preseasons next year and still going to have 16 regular seasons next year. But that doesn't mean that 2010 we might not to see some movement, especially
possible.
Because in 2010 is it 09 or 10 is the last year of the collective bargaining?
I think 09 is last year.
Okay.
And then I think isn't 2010 the uncapped year?
Yes.
Or the possibility of it?
Oh, I thought the uncapped year was 11.
You might be right. Yeah.
I think what they can do, I think the last year of the deal is 09, but I think that for some whatever reason, 10, the year it has to stay in place.
Okay, all right.
But the uncapped year then would be 11 because there's no deal in place.
All right.
I think that's the way it is, and again, I could be wrong, and I'm sure somebody will correct me if I am, because we do have a smart crowd here. But that's why I think this all kind of lines up for 2010 and or 11, where you might see some changes like spring football and less preseason games and maybe an extra regular season game. I think that's definitely on the agenda. So what's on your schedule for the rest of the week? What are you working on, by the way, next week for PFW?
We're going to take a look at the reinforcements, or the potential of reinforcements on the offensive line with Oliver Ross and Stephen Neal now starting the clock on practice.
Good.
And their potential return. And I will be your weekly web update guy, your daily web update guy, rather. So I will try to bring you the skinny from the locker room every day, do the best I can with that.
Yeah, baby.
And of course, we had Ask PFW yesterday, which is a very rip-roaring edition with a lot of emails.
But it's
a
lot
of emails. Well, it's fun after reading the, like, until you read the 50th, you know, Matt Castle sucks, get him out of town email. It gets old after a while, but it is humorous to read. I was also told today to crawl back from under the rock, which I came from, so.
Well, you can come crawl under this rock with
me
anytime you want.
Sounds good to me.
All right. Mike, thanks again for the time,
no problem,
as always.
All right.
And we'll either see you tomorrow or we'll see you certainly on Monday, right?
Yes, definitely.
All right, Michael Parenti from Patriot Football Weekly. We'll take a timeout. On the other side, Ron Jaworski, ESPN, right here inside the playbook.
We know you have a busy day ahead of you, and mornings are always tough to get through. So stop by your local Dunkin' Donuts today and grab a freshly ground, freshly brewed Dunkin' Donuts coffee. It's the perfect thing to get you going in the morning. Dunkin' Donuts coffee is made with real Arabica beans, which give it that rich flavor everybody loves. And while you're there, try the new egg white flatbread sandwich from the new DD Smart Menu. Choose from two delicious varieties, turkey sausage or veggie. Both served on multigrain bread. With under 300 calories, you can now make a smarter choice for breakfast. So, stop into your local Dunkin' Donuts today and try one with a medium hot coffee for only $3.99. Price and participation may vary, plus applicable taxes. Limited time offer.
What do I love at Qdoba Mexican Grill?
I love this Qdoba Catering.
If you've got a group of folks to feed, Qdoba Catering is totally the way to go.
You've got the hot taco bar.
The hot nacho bar.
The hot naked burrito bar.
Did I mention that they're hot?
I make the phone call and they take care of everything.
People come and they
just help themselves.
They come with everything you'd need to feed a group of hungry people.
Marinated grilled chicken and beef.
Three kinds of salsa.
Fresh lettuce.
Guacamole.
Cookies and
brownies.
Homemade tortilla chips.
Everything.
Oh, we get Qdoba Catering for all kinds of different occasions.
Tailgate parties.
Soccer games.
Birthday parties.
Baby shower. For my son's graduation party. It's perfect for office meetings.
You open the door to the conference room, you get the smell of Qdoba.
Hot bars are totally unique.
It's incredible. People love it. It's fresh.
Affordable.
That's the easy way to plan a party.
That's what I love about Qdoba Mexican Grill.
That's what I love about Qdoba Catering.
Have a group to feed? Order a hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering and give them food they'll never forget. What are you going to love at Qdoba?
Big games mean big parties. Feed 20 or more of your friends with a Qdoba hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering. It's fast, fresh, and budget-friendly. Now with 16 Massachusetts locations, opening September at Patriot Place in Kenmore Square. Full menu available at Qdoba.com.
Super League Championship in the history books. The Revs are making another run in an MLS Cup Championship. Don't miss their playoff push at Gillette Stadium with the Budweiser Quest for the Cup 2-pack. With the Budweiser Quest for the Cup 2-pack, you'll get two tickets to one of the Revs' final matches of the season and a pair of Budweiser Revolution pint glasses free. That's two tickets, two pint glasses, and one chance to cheer on the Revolution at Gillette Stadium with playoff implications on the line. Budweiser Quest for the Cup 2-pack start at just $38. Take in a Revs match, and you'll take home a matching pair of Revolution pint glasses free. Must be 21 or older to participate. Call the Revolution ticket office at 1-877-GET-REVS or log on to revolutionsoccer.net for tickets, game information, and everything else New England Revolution.
What a goal! Taylor Twellman!
Pride.
The sellout crowd in Foxborough rises to their feet.
Passion.
Oh my goodness! Michael Parkhurst! Are you kidding me?
Revolution.
Well, it's that time of year again.
Well, we thought we'd take a little NFL Films music here, give you an opportunity to get into the mood with someone who certainly knows how to break down a film or two in his career, not only as a player but as a television analyst, and the esteemed Ron Jaworski, former pro quarterback, now a part of the Monday Night Football team on ESPN with Mike Tirico and Tony Kornheiser, and he'll be a part of the broadcast crew at Gillette Stadium on Monday night when the Patriots take on the Denver Broncos. Joined us now inside the playbook. Ron, it is indeed a pleasure to talk to you again. Thanks for spending time with us today.
Great to be with you, John. I love that NFL Films music. You know, yeah, I maintain
Gary, do we have him there?
NFL
I don't have
Films.
Should we try that again? Hello, Ron.
Hey, John.
Hey, thanks again. Sure appreciate the time today.
Yeah, now I got you.
Okay, perfect. Now we're working. Hey, you know,
communication is good.
Yeah, right. Communication, modern technology, you know, all that stuff. Let's start off with the obvious, because this has been certainly a point of contention with a lot of Patriots fans ever since week one when Tom Brady went down. And now that you've had a chance to have a look at the Patriots a little bit, I know you've watched a lot of film, seen some of the games as well. You've seen Matt Cassel at quarterback. What are your honest impressions of Matt Cassel and how he is developing and whether or not he is the best option for the Patriots right now?
Well, right now he is the best option for the Patriots. There's no question of that. You know, I've looked at all the Patriots games on the coaches' tape, so I get a pretty good perspective on what Josh McDaniels is trying to do with the design of the offense and get an idea of what his reads are going to be. You know, I'm never 100% sure because I don't design the offense and don't have to execute it, but I can get an idea from looking at the tape. And kind of what I've gleaned from studying this offense, I believe they're asking Matt Cassel to run the same offense that Tom Brady ran. And that just isn't going to happen. I mean, we're talking about one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time in Tom Brady. I still see, you know, the high percentage shotgun formation, the high percentage spreading the field with some empty looks, some four and five wide receiver looks, you know, giving Matt a lot of reading to do, a lot of his progression. And in this offense, the way it was structured under Tom Brady, and to me it is still structured, you know, the quarterback has to make decisions, you know, has to make great decisions throughout the game. Tom Brady was prepared for that. He had the experience to do that. Matt Cassel has not had the experience to handle all the reading progressions that defenses give you based on the way this offense is designed. I thought when Cassel took over, I would see a more simplified offense, a little more running game based. That just hasn't happened.
Do you think maybe it still should happen?
Yes, I do believe it should happen. It's probably the opposite of what Josh and maybe Bill believe, you know, should happen with this offense. But I don't think any quarterback with as little experience as Matt Cassel has in an NFL system, playing against complex, sophisticated defenses week in and week out, you've got to have experience. You've got to be seeing these things at the warp speed of which the NFL is played at. I really don't care how much practice time you've had, how much tape study you do. You have to have game experience to handle the nuances of sophisticated NFL defenses. And clearly, I think you should limit what he has to do rather than expand what he's used to doing.
I think that's an interesting point that you bring up, because a lot of the talk right after Tom Brady went down was the possibility of bringing in a veteran, someone who could come in and maybe, I don't know, for whatever reason, inject a little life into the offense and still give Matt Cassel a chance to perhaps grow a little bit with what was going on. Would that have been the right thing to do? Would it still be the right thing to do? And how difficult is it for a quarterback who isn't used to the system to come in and learn the system and be effective?
John, I think bringing another guy in would have been a problem, and it would still be a problem if you brought a veteran guy. Okay. I think when you make your plans or how you operate your football team, those decisions are made, you know, in the off season and through training camp as you begin to define your roster, what you want to do. You know, obviously, you know, the Patriots felt very comfortable with Tom Brady, who wouldn't, and they felt that, hey, you know, you got to go into the season and say, hey, the guy's not going to get hurt. You know, he's been very resilient. He's got a long, you know, 100-plus game starting streak, but we all know, you know, the next play could be your last. They roll the dice. They roll the dice like a lot of teams do, like Green Bay has done, you know, with Aaron Rodgers, backing him up with two rookies. I mean, a lot of teams take that gamble. I think it's a high-risk gamble, but they're rolling the dice. Unfortunately for the Patriots, came up snake eyes and Tom Brady got hurt, and you have to go to Matt Cassel. I think it's literally impossible, you know. And I know Brett Favre is playing pretty well right now, but boy, he still leaves a lot of plays on the field. And I think if you have a player that's understanding of your offensive system, can read coverage, knows the adjustments that are made after the ball is snapped, because that's when you got to play quarterback in this league. You know, all the adjustments made once the ball is snapped. For the high percentage of time, I believe a veteran quarterback, even coming in a short period of time, cannot assimilate an offense.
Okay, that's fair enough. Now that you've looked at this team a little bit, and I know how a lot of us feel about it, and I certainly know how our fans feel about it, what are your thoughts on this team's offensive line, number one? And number two, do you have any thoughts one way or the other on if Lawrence Maroney can still be an effective running back?
Yeah, I'll answer those, and they're both very difficult questions. I'm sure they're questions
sure.
that the people up in New England are asking. I've always felt, you know, even in the Super Bowl run for the Patriots, that this was just a little bit above average offensive line.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you look at it, each of those guys individually, they're just average players, but they play so well together. You know, they've got that silent communication. They understand what everyone's doing, that nonverbal communication, because they've been together so long. So they have played well together. But I'm going to be realistic here, too, as well. Tom Brady was one of the great pocket passers that this game has ever seen. And I can't wait till he comes back, because I always love studying Tom Brady and what he does in the pocket. And if an offensive lineman made a mistake, normally Tom Brady made them look good with a subtle little movement in the pocket to get rid of the football. If there was quick pressure, he always knew where to go with the football. So Tom Brady was the guy, much like Peyton Manning does in Indianapolis, that makes the offensive line look better. So, you know, when you lose Tom Brady, I think you lost an awful lot on the whole football team. And now I'll get to the running game side of it. Because
okay.
I just got done watching the running game of the Patriots. And, you know, there are some holes. I think if there's one thing, you know, in hindsight, maybe the Patriots coaches might be looking out saying, hey, you know what? We do have a pretty good offensive line. We can come off the ball. We can run the ball pretty darn good. There's some holes here. The backs have just not been running well. And I know Maroney's kind of in a doghouse, and I can see why. You know, I look at that end zone camera, and I see some nice seams for him to hit. I see a guy not accelerating through the hole. I see a guy decelerating at the hole, trying to bounce to the outside. You know, those are the things that coaches are going to get alarmed with when they look at the same tape, you know, that I'm fortunate enough to look at. They see a guy that's not flying up there with an anger. Initially, you got to run angry, and
right.
I just don't see that. But I also thought of Sammy Morris and Kevin Falk, and those guys, you know, would add another dimension to the running game, and it just hasn't clicked. It seems like as a group, this running back group just has not run the ball efficiently. They're missing the holes. They're missing the cutback lanes. They're not bouncing outside when they're supposed to. You know, for me, looking at this, it's very surprising because I know how well these guys are coached.
Does this correlate at all, you think, with some of the decreased production from the offensive line?
Well, I think some of it is, but like I said, for the most part, I think the offensive line in the run game, you know, has been pretty good. They have created some seams where the running backs can run the football.
Okay. They're just not taking advantage
of it. Just not taking advantage of it. And Maroney's disappointing because, you know the, one of the statistics I keep here at NFL Films is offensive efficiency for running backs, and that is 4-plus yards per carry.
Mm-hmm.
And there were only four backs last year in the NFL that had an efficiency of over 4 yards per carry, getting more than 4 yards, and one was Lawrence Maroney. Right now, not even close to that, just not running the ball well.
Right. Ron Jaworski from ESPN, who will be a part of the Monday Night Football crew with Mike Tirico and Tony Kornheiser, with the Patriots taking on the Broncos on Monday night with us here inside the playbook. What has happened now, of course, with the Patriots at 3-2 is that we have a concertedly more, shall we say, challenging AFC East. What are your thoughts on the rest of the division coming up to the Patriots level with the Patriots kind of sliding back a little bit?
Well, this is obvious, and this happens, you know, around the National Football League in each division. Maybe not every year, but there is an ebb and flow to each football team. And there's no question that the Patriots, you know, have done a tremendous job for a number of years, you know, winning Super Bowls, dominating the division, you know, dominating the National Football League. But eventually, the draft is a great equalizer. Free agency is a great equalizer. All those things come into play. The league is based on everyone being 8-8, you know, and that's kind of how it plays out. All of a sudden, you get an injury here, an injury there. The whole landscape changes. But, you know, teams like Buffalo, teams like the New York Jets, teams like the Miami Dolphins, they're not going to stay at the bottom of the barrel very long. Eventually, they're going to get it. They're going to get better players because they get the earlier draft choices. The mistakes they made, you know, they're not going to make those mistakes anymore because the organizations get used to working with each other. The coaches get better as they go year to year. So clearly, eventually those teams catch up to you.
I think that Buffalo certainly has shown at least a little bit of momentum continuation from last year. I think the thing that shocks everybody around here is that the Dolphins have made as big a leap as they apparently have. What about you?
Yeah, you know, I'm not surprised at all. I think, you know, one thing we all know about Bill Parcells, you know, he knows how to build a football team. You know, the Dallas Cowboy football team that's successful right now is still, you know, a Bill Parcells product for the most part. Bill knows how to build an organization. Now, the Dolphins still have a ways to go, but the one thing that I can see when I look at them on tape is they're men. You know, and that may sound like kind of a corny phrase, but I watch them play. They play hard. They play tough. They may not be the most talented, but boy, I'll tell you, they get after it. They play the game kind of the old fashioned way. And when you have a Chad Pennington, you got a quarterback that'll manage the game well. He won't make the bonehead mistakes. You know, and he'll keep you in football games. So, you know, they're not a playoff contender yet, but I think they're becoming a good football team.
Well, let's get to Monday night then, simply because that's why you're going to be here in Gillette Stadium.
Thank you, and I look forward to it. It's always great coming up to Foxborough.
And we're always happy to have you. We hope that it turns out to be a good game for you. Obviously, Denver's struggling a little bit themselves in offense after opening up with three straight 30-plus scoring games. They've struggled to get into double figures in the last couple of weeks. Coming into this game, the Patriots' problems, we've documented at least some of them here. So which team stands to gain the most with a win, or I guess the other way of looking at it is which one gains or doesn't gain if they lose?
Well, you know, obviously a lot at stake even this early in the season, and I think both teams are still trying to find their identity. You know, we talked about the woes right now, you know, of the Patriots, and, you know, it's a football team that still is a work in progress. And I would say the same thing about the Denver Broncos. They've been very uneven this season. Obviously, one of the game's great throwers comes into Foxborough in Jay Cutler. I mean, it's a pleasure watching this guy play, and I think the fans that haven't seen him live, they will see a jet stream behind the ball when he throws it. I mean, he just has a cannon on his shoulder, and they attack the football field. And I know people may be going, oh boy, you know, Philip Rivers had a good day against us last week, and now you bring the vertical game of Brandon Marshall combined with Jay Cutler into Foxborough's Gillette Stadium. You know, this one could be a little bit of a shootout type game, and of course there's no quarterback. I like those kinds of game, but because when you look at the other side, the Denver Bronco defense isn't very good, so I think this game could be in the high 20s into the 30s.
I think that everybody would be excited with that. You mentioned Brandon Marshall, and obviously he's had an unbelievable start. He had 18 catches in a game earlier this year. He had a great year last year as well. What makes him a special receiver, and what have you seen from him that allows Jay Cutler to get to him more often?
There are a number of things. You know, Mike Shanahan really is an excellent designer of offense. You know, he comes into the game prepared from his tape study and puts together a game plan that attacks the weakness of the team he plays. You know, he is basically a passing offensive coordinator. They like to throw the football. You know, we all know about their stretch running game, which is a solid part of their offense right now. But right now, you know, all that does is set up the play-action pass game for Jay Cutler. And when you have a Brandon Marshall and a Scheffler who will be out this week for Patriots fans, that's good, because this guy is also a vertical threat from the tight end position. But when you have a Brandon Marshall, you have a guy that's big, he's strong, he's fast, he's competitive, he has ball skills, he can snatch it when the ball's in the air, just loves to play the game, and he's the great security blanket for Jay Cutler. They have just incredible chemistry.
Selvin Young has certainly got a lot of great time at running back. Obviously, Michael Pittman has been a factor. And in fact, I believe he rushed for over 100 yards last week. Does the running game for Denver help Jay Cutler in his passing game directly, or can it still be more effective to make him a better quarterback?
Well, you know, I always say a quarterback's best friend is the running game. Not that it's going to be the foundation of what you do, but I believe if you have the ability to stick that ball out and bring it back, you know, into your hand via the play-action passing game and freeze linebackers and get safeties to sneak up near that line of scrimmage and get nosy, that's when you create voids in the secondary. That's when you create the big plays down the field. So clearly the Broncos do run the football effectively and efficiently, and it really does set up the deep ball threat for them. That's going down the field because Jay Cutler has the arm. And the thing about Cutler, where a lot of times when we see quarterbacks use that play action and they move outside the pocket on that roll, you know, they're usually throwing that 3 or 4 yard pass in the flat, or they got a tight end coming across at about 8 to 10 yards. That's not what the Broncos do. When he comes on that bootleg, he's looking downfield. He'll have those deep crosses at 40 to 50 yards down the field. So they just don't run a dink and dunk style play action passing game. When they're throwing the football off play action, they go for the home run.
I think that's what worries Patriots fans, Ron.
Yeah, I would think so. Like I said, we saw the problems in the secondary last week, exposed by Philip Rivers to a certain degree. And, you know, you look at the overall quarterback rating against the Patriots right now, it's 96.2. That rate's 26 in the NFL. So clearly, you know, it's a team that is struggling in defending the pass.
I look at this Broncos defensive team, and I know that they've had their problems this year, but individually, I mean, Champ Bailey, Dre Bly, Boss Bailey, I've always liked Elvis Dumervil, Dwayne Robertson. Why is Denver's defense as porous as they are?
Yeah, it's not a physical defense. It kind of is a defense that likes to run around. And, you know, in this league, it's hard to run around blocks. And, you know, you're mentioning guys like, you know, Champ Bailey and Dre Bly. And I'm just looking at the tape right now of Jacksonville last week. And, you know, we're really watching Dre Bly struggle in his coverage. So then I go through my statistics of what we have on Dre Bly. And, you know, and through so far this season, you know, he's been targeted 42 times, wow. 32 times passes complete against him. That's wow. 76% of the time when you throw a Dre Bly, you're going to get a completion. The two of those have gone for touchdowns. So clearly, you know, here are guys that aren't necessarily because they're great names are not playing that well. Although I will say Champ Bailey's been playing terrific. He's only been thrown at 13 times so far this season, completed 9. So teams are staying away from Champ Bailey and attacking Dre Bly.
So it seems like then we could see the Patriots go toward Bly, and we could see the Broncos go toward somebody like Delta O'Neal.
See, you didn't need me to tell you that.
No. That's good stuff, though. That's good stuff.
It's easy, isn't it, John?
I guarantee you, Ron, there are fans that are listening right now that their jaws are open. With all due respect to you, of course. I mean, they're like, whoa, that's good stuff, you know?
Now, and the other thing, too, from a Patriots, you know, defensive side, this is basically a single high safety. So you're going to leave those corners out there in an island. You know, and I think what they have to do from the defensive side is take a look at their coverage schemes and maybe go to some of that cover two where those corners do have some help over the top and they could play a little more aggressive at the line of scrimmage. Yeah, it does take away a little bit in the running game, but sometimes you're going to have to make some sacrifices. And the way the secondary is playing right now, I think you've got to avoid giving up the big play. So I think, you know, the cover two is going to be have to become a little more predominant in their scheme.
That's great stuff. We could go all day on this, but I know you got to get back to work. So I want you to know that it's greatly appreciated your time today. Visit with our fans as well. And we'll look forward to not only your visit here on Monday, but we'll look forward to listening in on the broadcast.
We appreciate it, John. It should be a heck of a game on Monday night. We're always excited to come up to Gillette Stadium. It's a great ambiance for football.
Absolutely. Thank you, Ron.
Thank you.
You got it. Ron Jaworski. With Mike Tirico and Tony Kornheiser, part of ESPN's Monday Night Football game crew as the Patriots take on the Denver Broncos at Gillette Stadium. 8:30 is the, I guess, the official kickoff time for Monday night's game in Foxborough. How about that, kids? Was that good enough for you?
Jaws.
Yeah, I'm telling you. Serious breaking down of details. And the best part about it is, and we had a chance to talk to him last year before a Monday Night Football game when he was coming into town, and we caught him at the same place. Caught him, he keeps an office at NFL Films in Jersey where they're located, I believe, and he spends most of his time there rather than in Bristol, Connecticut. And he's looking at film. He's looking at game tapes. And we caught him today. Looking specifically at what? Denver defensive tape and how teams attack the Broncos on defense. And so it looks like Dre Bly and Delta O'Neal will certainly be marked men on Monday night. So it gives you something to sort of anticipate, maybe even something for you to look forward to as well. Maybe even something you can kind of follow if you're one of those that likes to follow the story within the story. Or if you like to kind of read between the lines, or you like to look at individual matchups or players as well, as much as television cameras obviously will let you do that, Monday night's game is a great opportunity to do that. See how the Patriots, if they take advantage of what the film is showing, will they go target Dre Bly? Will they even challenge Champ Bailey? Will they try to jam the ball up the middle and get to that soft underside, as it at least appears, that Denver's defense has become to this point in time? To me, that says, you know, vertical up and down run game. Somebody to pound it between the tackles. And if Stephen Neal does come back, and we've again already discussed this Patriots offensive line is so much better when he's in there, especially from a run blocking perspective. To me, this really just begs ball control offense, keeping the ball out of Jay Cutler's hands as best as you possibly can, trying to control the clock, keep moving the chains, and attacking the underneath side and attacking on the corners against Bly. That has to be certainly a big part of what the Patriots will be working on this week in practice as they try to get back in the winning column and beat the Denver Broncos. That is the task at hand. And we mentioned a little bit yesterday on the program how this is a good opportunity for this team because, you know, you've got the Denver game at home. You've got the St. Louis game at home to follow. And it seems to me to be an opportunity here to get on a roll before you have to go back onto the road and you play a big Sunday night game at Indianapolis. And frankly, from what I saw from the Colts this last week, it looks like they're now beginning at least to get back into Colts-like shape. Maybe that also coincides with the fact that Peyton Manning is getting healthier as the season progresses. He got off to such a tough start with not only one, but now we're told two separate knee procedures in the offseason. So maybe now he's just getting better. You know, and that does spell trouble, I think, for the rest of the AFC. I don't think anybody really thought that the Colts were going to be down and out for the entire year. Did you think that? No, see, I didn't. And so if you can get on a bit of a roll, if you can score some points, if you can get the confidence factor up high again, you have an opportunity to do that against this Denver team. You got to figure out a way to slow them down as well. But you get a chance to do that against Denver and St. Louis in back-to-back home games before you have to go get challenged again and play at Indy on Sunday, November the 2nd. So that's what the Patriots have ahead of them. You know they'll tell you it's a week at a time, game at a time. You hear all the old cliches. But even if you just expand that just a little bit to look at what the next 2 or 3 weeks bring, then you can see there's going to be some opportunity there to correct this. I mean, if you get a couple of wins and you improve to 5-2 going into Indy, you'll feel better about this team, won't you? I will. You probably should too. You go into Indianapolis, okay. Maybe you don't win that game, but then you finally get a chance to meet Buffalo. You got to go all the way to the November 9th before you play the Bills for the first time this season. And then you have three straight divisional games. November 9th, Buffalo, home. November 13th, a Thursday night game against the Jets, home. And then at Miami on Sunday, November 23rd. So three straight divisional games to follow the Indianapolis game. If the division means anything to you at all, and you obviously have to, that has to be your first goal, win the division, because then you know you're in the playoffs, right? But even if you stub your toe at Indy and you find a way to beat Buffalo and New York at home, and maybe you get revenge at Miami somehow, some way, and you got to win a road game somewhere this year, don't you? I mean, they won at the Jets. You got to win another one somewhere, and you probably have to do it against a team that is certainly competitive, if not an out-and-out playoff contender, right? In order to stamp yourself as legitimate, right? Well, then you got a chance here to be as good as maybe 8-3 going into Thanksgiving weekend with the Pittsburgh Steelers. And I think if you can get to that point, if this team is 3-2 now, and you're telling me that they can be 8-3 going into Pittsburgh, who amongst us is going to say, I'll take that? Everybody. You're raising your hand, right? I am too. I'll take that right now. But you can see where the schedule can kind of line up and help the Pats. If, of course, they take care of their own business. And they should be able to do that if, of course, they can start with Denver this Monday night. The opportunity is there. The schedule unfolds well for them. There's plenty of chances to get healthy. There's plenty of chances to get on the right track. The schedule actually really benefits this team in all the struggles that they're having. This is the year to have this schedule. So let's see now if this team and this coaching staff can take advantage of the schedule, which has been very kind to them this year. Web Radio at Patriots.com is the email address if you have some questions, some thoughts, some comments, perhaps, on anything that we've heard today. And Ron Jaworski was fantastic. And, of course, if you're just logging in and you just missed it, well, it doesn't exactly stink to be you, because wait until the program is over, and maybe in about a half an hour to 45 minutes, you'll be able to download the podcast. And when you do, you'll like what you hear. Let's take a timeout. We'll come back and continue with some more news and notes concerning the Patriots and the Broncos, and some thoughts from you perhaps as well, right here inside the playbook.
We know you have a busy day ahead of you, and mornings are always tough to get through. So stop by your local Dunkin' Donuts today and grab a freshly ground, freshly brewed Dunkin' Donuts coffee. It's the perfect thing to get you going in the morning. Dunkin' Donuts coffee is made with real Arabica beans, which give it that rich flavor everybody loves. And while you're there,
Try the new egg white flatbread sandwich from the new DD Smart Menu. Choose from two delicious varieties, turkey sausage or veggie. Both served on multi-grain bread. With under 300 calories, you can now make a smarter choice for breakfast. So, stop into your local Dunkin' Donuts today and try one with a medium hot coffee for only $3.99. Price and participation may vary, plus applicable taxes. Limited time offer.
What do I love at Qdoba Mexican Grill?
I love this Qdoba Catering.
If you've got a group of folks to feed, Qdoba Catering is totally the way to go.
You've got the hot taco bar.
The hot nacho bar.
The hot naked burrito bar.
Did I mention that they're hot?
I make the phone call and they take care of everything.
People come and they
just help themselves.
They come with everything you need to feed a group of hungry people.
Marinated grilled chicken and beef.
Three kinds of salsa.
Fresh lettuce.
Guacamole.
Cookies and
brownies.
Homemade tortilla chips.
Everything.
But we get Qdoba Catering for all kinds of different occasions.
Tailgate parties.
Soccer games.
Birthday parties.
Baby shower. For my son's graduation. Party. It's perfect for office meetings.
You open the door to the conference room, you get the smell of Qdoba.
Hot bars are totally unique.
It's incredible. People love it. It's fresh.
Affordable.
That's the easy way to plan a party.
That's what I love about Qdoba Mexican Grill.
That's what I love about Qdoba Catering.
Have a group to feed? Order a hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering and give them food they'll never forget. What are you going to love at Qdoba?
Big games mean big parties. Feed 20 or more of your friends with a Qdoba hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering. It's fast, fresh, and budget-friendly. Now with 16 Massachusetts locations, opening September at Patriot Place in Kenmore Square. Full menu available at Qdoba.com.
The Super League Championship in the history books. The Revs are making another run in an MLS Cup Championship. Don't miss their playoff push at Gillette Stadium with the Budweiser Quest for the Cup 2-Pack. With the Budweiser Quest for the Cup 2-Pack, you'll get two tickets to one of the Revs' final matches of the season and a pair of Budweiser Revolution pint glasses free. That's two tickets, two pint glasses, and one chance to cheer on the Revolution at Gillette Stadium with playoff implications on the line. Budweiser Quest for the Cup 2-Pack start at just $38. Take in a Revs match, and you'll take home a matching pair of Revolution pint glasses free. Must be 21 or over to participate. Call the Revolution ticket office at 1-877-GET-REVS or log on to revolutionsoccer.net for tickets, game information, and everything else New England Revolution.
What a goal! Taylor Twellman!
Pride.
The sellout crowd in Foxborough rises to their feet.
Passion.
Oh my goodness! Michael Parkhurst! Are you kidding me?
Revolution.
Well, it's that time of year again where Sunday means you're doing something football. Whether it's tailgating in the parking lot, throwing the pigskin around, or just hanging in and watching the game on the tube, it's all about football. And when you're not watching football or playing football, well, I think we both know you're thinking football. And all that can make you a little hungry. That's why there's the tasty snack wrap from McDonald's. Snack wraps now come in your choice of three flavors. New Chipotle barbecue, honey mustard, and ranch. And they're available with grilled or crispy chicken. Delicious and easy to eat. It's the perfect game time snack. So grab one today. And when you do, if you're looking at that chicken select and it kind of reminds you of a quarterback in the middle of the pocket, except now he's surrounded by cheddar jack cheese, ranch sauce, and lettuce, well, maybe you're thinking just a little too much about football. McDonald's. I'm loving it.
We continue inside Patriots Playbook on a Wednesday. I'm John Rook, and again, our thanks to Ron Jaworski from ESPN for joining us. And again, you'll be able to download his interview via podcast probably in a little over half an hour or so in case you missed out. Just kind of curious to note here, and by the way, here in about 10 or 15 minutes, we've been able to get inside the Patriots locker room today following practice, and we've got some interviews to bring you from inside the locker room as the team gets ready for the Denver Broncos on Monday night, so we'll get that to you here in very short order. In the meantime, it seems as if media in particular, and I'm sure that's the way it is amongst some fans, not all fans of the Patriots, but some fans probably still feel this way, and I know it's pretty clear that the media still feels this way. People still expect, especially now that the Patriots have had two losses of 20 or more points. It's the first time ever under head coach Bill Belichick that the Patriots have two losses of 20 or more points in the same season. I don't know if you knew that or not, but it's happened. And we've still got 11 games to play. I think we all know that. And there's still, an opportunity for improvement here. But there are some people, and I caught a bit on ESPN.com And let's see. I also got who is this guy? Reuben Brown, who's a former Buffalo Bill and Chicago Bear guard. You might remember the name Reuben Brown. He was obviously a Pro Bowler. And even though I guess he's not officially retired from what I understand, he's been hosting a radio talk show, I guess, in Buffalo. And he said this past week, or I don't know if it was a day or two ago, whatever, but it was after this past weekend's games were completed. He seems to think that it's going to get rougher for the Patriots from here on out, rather than potentially better, even though you'd like to think that, you know, in theory, the more time that a guy like Matt Castle has to work with guys like Randy Moss and whoever, that it's going to be that much easier. And if the team can stay relatively healthy and you get all the pieces to your offensive line puzzle back into place, it should make things easier, right? Stands to reason that things would be a little bit easier, right? Well, he doesn't think so, because I caught this from Reuben Brown, who says that, you know, in fact, here's his quote. He says, "The Randy Moss tantrum hasn't really set in yet." That came from, I credited that to Reuben Brown. That came from Kim Bocamper. Now, those of you may remember Kim Bocamper as a former Miami Dolphin. He was a member of the Killer Bees defensive unit a number of years ago, and he is currently a radio analyst for the Miami Dolphins. But Bocamper is the one that says he believes that the Randy Moss tantrum is going to happen. Doesn't know when. He just says it's going to happen. And he says when that happens, anything can happen as far as the divisional race is concerned. So you can count Bocamper and you can count Reuben Brown. He didn't say those exact words, but Brown also has intimated that he believes that the Patriots are still kind of sitting on a powder keg. That, you know, the fact is that adding into the equation here, that nobody seems to be adding into the equation, that they keep waiting for, you know, things to continue to go south and Randy Moss to throw his tantrum and create some divisiveness within this locker room. You know? Reuben Brown says they just don't have it. But he does say the good thing is that all these guys have worked together for a while and it'll start picking up. Now is the time to turn it on. And he says, as far as the AFC East is concerned, it's going to boil down to who wins out of the Jets and the Bills. That's where it's going to be. So Reuben Brown completely discounts the Patriots. Kim Bocamper completely discounts the Patriots. It's funny. Everybody within this division, and of course the Patriots have played both New York and Miami and have yet to face Buffalo, but, you know, it's funny that divisional people see the king may not yet be dead, but that the king is certainly vulnerable within the division. Whereas outside of the division, I think more people are giving the Patriots credit, and more people believe that the Patriots still have the ability to turn it on or turn it around, as the case may be. And I find that kind of an odd set of circumstances. Do the divisional opponents and those who work within the division for other teams, do they see more than others? And if they do, what are they seeing that gives them the thought that the Patriots can't turn it around? I'd be curious to ask somebody like Brown or Bocamper to ask them what they see based on what they know of this team. You'd think that they'd have a little more intimate knowledge, maybe, of some of the inner workings of this team, knowing some of the people within the organization, having the fact that they're going to play this team twice every year anyway. What do they know that we don't know? Maybe that's even a more important question. And I do find it strange that, you know, it more than just Kim Bocamper believe that, you know, Randy Moss is going to be a negative factor for this team before this season is over. Strange, just strange. Keep that in the food for thought category, because quite frankly, I thought we were kind of past that. I kind of thought that even with the tough times that we've had, we've seen that you know Randy may keep to himself a little bit, but you know he was, and we've discussed this many times here in this particular forum. He was made a captain for a reason in that locker room. Players respect him. They expect his ability. They expect his ability to come to work, to be a pro, to do the things that you're supposed to do in order to be a good football player and to be a leader. We know that. I wonder if the other people know that. So just an interesting observation anyway, and I thought I'd share that with you here. A little bit from the Denver side of the game on Monday night, and we'll dive into a little bit more of this tomorrow. Tomorrow's program, Eric Scalavino from PFW will be around. Of course, Russell Baxter from ESPN will also join us on our regular Thursday program. But the Broncos, actually Monday night's game for the Broncos is a bench watermark. It's a big game for them. I mean, unless you really know a lot about Broncos football history, you would be completely unaware of this. But fact is that Denver is looking for its 400th overall victory in franchise history. And if they win on Monday night, it'll be their 400th win in franchise history, which I find kind of strange, but that's what it is. They're looking for number 400. And they've been trumpeting that fact, I think, most of the week. And, of course, Denver has plenty more to play for obvious reasons, other than winning number 400 in a significant venue, Monday Night Football, in which, the entire football nation is basically tuned in and will be tuned in and usually is tuned in. Fact is, they hold a one-game lead now over the Chargers in the AFC West. Patriots could have done them a huge favor, and I'm sure there were some Broncos that were rooting for the Patriots over the Chargers on Sunday night, because now the Chargers are only one game back at 3-3. Broncos are 4-2 going in. Broncos, as Ron Jaworski alluded to, they've got a high-powered offense. They lead the NFL in first downs. They're fourth in the NFL in yards per game, at just a tick under 400 yards of total offense. Jay Cutler is thrown for almost 1,700 yards in their six games, and that is the best in the AFC right now after their six games. And here's the other thing that should scare you, Patriots fans. And again, you got to throw in the bad with the good, or the good with the bad, whichever way you prefer it. But Cutler has benefited from an offensive line that has given up just two sacks in 231 pass plays. How about that? That is an NFL low. NFL low. Two sacks in 231 pass plays. And we've already documented even here today on this program. The Patriots struggles with the defensive line. We talked about that in the opening hour with Mike Parenti. It will be incumbent of the Patriots, and again, the more that I think about it and the more that I consider it, it will be incumbent upon the Patriots to absolutely and unequivocally hold on to the football and try to play a little keep away from a Broncos offense that could certainly slice and dice that secondary. And if you're struggling from a pass rush point of view as well, and your secondary is weak, you certainly can't give a guy like Cutler the opportunity to carve you up. So you're going to have to limit his chances. Ball control may be the key. Wouldn't be shocked at all to see some sort of ball control, even with a controlled passing game. Wouldn't be shocked at all, and you shouldn't be shocked at all to see the Patriots try to employ something like that on Monday night. Now, to that end, they've got to find a way to get some pressure on Cutler in most circumstances. I don't know if you jam the receivers at the line or not, but, a guy like Marshall, Brandon Marshall, has had a spectacular year thus far. He's an awful big dude to be, jamming at the line. So I don't know how the Patriots approach that. I think the best approach is just to play keep away, especially knowing that they excel at what you are weakest at. Makes sense to me. What about to you? All right, now let's get you inside the Patriots locker room. From earlier today, just after the completion of practice today at Gillette, you'll have a chance to listen to Stephen Neal, who is back out on the practice field for the very first time since being activated from the PUP, the physically unable to perform list. Oliver Ross, who also being activated from the PUP list, and a newcomer to the Patriots. Sammy Morris, Ellis Hobbs, Mike Vrabel, and Delta O'Neal. Of course, had the absolute miserable game on Sunday night in San Diego, but he did not shy away from the media, and he's not going to shy away from you. So we'll get to Mr. Neal, Ross, Morris, Hobbs, Vrabel, and O'Neal after a quick timeout, and then same Pat's time, same Pat's channel tomorrow right here inside the playbook.
We know you have a busy day ahead of you, and mornings are always tough to get through. So stop by your local Dunkin' Donuts today and grab a freshly ground, freshly brewed Dunkin' Donuts coffee. It's the perfect thing to get you going in the morning. Dunkin' Donuts coffee is made with real Arabica beans, which give it that rich flavor everybody loves. And while you're there, try the new egg white flatbread sandwich from the new DD Smart Menu. Choose from two delicious varieties, turkey sausage or veggie. Both served on multi-grain bread. With under 300 calories, you can now make a smarter choice for breakfast. So, stop into your local Dunkin' Donuts today and try one with a medium hot coffee for only $3.99. Price and participation may vary, plus applicable taxes. Limited time offer.
What do I love at Qdoba Mexican Grill?
I love this Qdoba Catering.
If you've got a group of folks to feed, Qdoba Catering is totally the way to go.
You've got the hot taco bar.
The hot nacho bar.
The hot naked burrito bar.
Did I mention that they're hot?
I make the phone call and they take care of everything.
People come and they
just help themselves.
They come with everything you'd need to feed a group of hungry people.
Marinated grilled chicken and beef.
Three kinds of salsa.
Fresh lettuce.
Guacamole.
Cookies and
brownies.
Homemade tortilla chips.
Everything.
Oh, we get Qdoba Catering for all kinds of different occasions.
Tailgate parties.
Soccer games.
Birthday parties.
Baby shower. For my son's graduation party. It's perfect for office meetings.
You open the door to the conference room, you get the smell of Qdoba.
Hot bars are totally unique.
It's incredible. People love it. It's fresh.
Affordable.
That's the easy way to plan a party.
That's what I love about Qdoba Mexican Grill.
That's what I love about Qdoba Catering.
Have a group to feed? Order a hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering and give them food they'll never forget. What are you going to love at Qdoba?
Big games mean big parties. Feed 20 or more of your friends with a Qdoba hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering. It's fast, fresh, and budget-friendly. Now with 16 Massachusetts locations, opening September at Patriot Place in Kenmore Square. Full menu available at Qdoba.com.
Yeah.
Hard to say. I'm just excited to get an opportunity to practice today and have the coaches evaluate me to see where I'm at. Hopefully I can do something.
What's it been like watching what's been going on?
It's hard to see all your buddies out there having fun playing, but whatever I can do to help the team, I'm going to try to do.
Going back to when you got hurt in the Super Bowl, what kind of a process is this whole thing been, the recovery to get to the point you're at right now?
It's been frustrating, like I said, whenever you see all your buddies going to practice and playing in games, you definitely want to be out there, but have the attitude, come here, work hard every day, do whatever they tell you to do, and try to keep my head up and do that. Oh, no, just, seeing all your friends doing stuff and you want to join them.
In some ways, is the silver lining that you're fresh now, maybe as fresh as you've been? Usually by this point, you've probably gotten some bumps and bruises. You've been at it now since early August, but now it's different for you.
Maybe so. There's always good and bad. I'm probably have a lot of rust with that silver, so we'll have to see how it works out.
What do you think you bring to this team right now?
Someone who will do what the coach is asking to do, and like I said, I haven't practiced in a long time, so we'll have to see what's going on.
What have you gotten to know about Oliver? I assume you've spent a lot of time with him rehabbing, getting back here. What can you tell us about him?
Oh, he's a good guy. He's got a nice wife, a nice daughter.
When you came into camp, did you expect to be out this long, or did you think going into camp you might have a chance to be ready to start the season?
You never know. Like I said, there's a lot of decisions that have to be made, and you can't really foresee into the future because you'll have a lot of problems. So didn't know either way. A little bit, but I mean it's all part of the sport. So.
Steve, watching from afar, what have you seen from your line mates? Has it been good progress?
See a lot of guys busting it real hard and putting a lot of effort in there and improving week to week, and that's all you can really ask for.
Always good to have another guy back there, gives you more depth, more options.
I don't know if that's the coach. I don't know. Like I said, we'll see how it looks today.
Ross.
Yeah. First time going out there in a while, get to knock the rust off, move around a little bit, and just go from there.
What do you feel you bring to the table, skill set wise? You got a lot of experience in this league. Are there some things you can do that can help out here?
Well, I mean, Yeah, I have a lot of experience, but just go in and kind of get on the same page as the other guys. I mean, whether it's pass blocking, run blocking, you know, helping another guy out with a technique or, you know, something that I see different, you know, that they don't, you know, on the field. Just, you know, kind of blend in with those, with the guys that's playing now.
Obviously, you never want to get hurt and miss time, but is there a silver lining in the fact that while you were out, you could study the plays a little bit and kind of?
Yeah, I mean, Steve is different from mine. He's been here for a while, and this is my first year. So, I mean, like you said, it kind of helped out, you know, learning the plays, learning the system. I mean, pretty much the plays are the same throughout the league, but it's just different terminology. You know, one block may be different on each play and things like that.
What have you seen from a distance watching your fellow line mates on the field so far, you know, this season?
Pretty good. They get after it, run the ball pretty good. Pass block pretty good. So, you know, it's just still, like you said, it's continued to improve each week. And it's always towards the end of the season, and, you know, you want to continue to get better each week.
Now, Bill said you can play both sides at tackle. It seems like it's something easy, but I've heard from other tackles that it's not always as easy as it looks.
It's not really. I mean, you have to be able to switch it over in your mind. But once you work on it and practice a lot or do it a lot, then it kind of becomes second nature.
Sammy Morris.
Finished some runs here in the last couple of weeks in pretty physical fashion. Is that something you feel is a strength of your game?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's, you know, I may not outrun, you know, a lot of guys. And, you know, like I said, you know, you got to kind of, you know, play to what, you know, what would suit you best. And, like I said, personally, I always try to, you know, try to fall forward and kind of get the smaller hidden yards.
One of those plays was Jamal Williams, who you put your head down to. Do you realize who you're going against on that play, or do you just see blue? And,
yeah, well, initially it was, you know, you see the blue and you see the white helmet, and, you know, you kind of just, you know, with what was, you know, given, I just kind of had to lower my shoulder. It wasn't really until afterwards when I realized who it was. Yeah.
Do you feel that one the next day?
Oh, I feel them all, you know. I'm still feeling them now.
Can you talk about playing on Monday night against Denver and what you're expecting? It's coming home, you know, after being away for a while. And
yeah, well, I mean, I think the biggest thing is, it's, you know, it's another game, and it's our next game. And, you know, whether it's, you know, Sunday night or, you know, Monday night, like I said, it's, you know, it's a home game, and, you know, we need to get back on track.
Sammy, how nice is it to get a guy like Steve?
You know, Steve, like I said, is a very, you know, talented guy. You know, he's a big guy, and, you know, obviously, you know, it's his wrestling history. And, like I said, he's, you know, I think he definitely adds another dimension to our offense.
Ellis Hobbs.
Bill, it's safe to say you guys are searching for consistency on defense.
Yeah, I think just consistently making good plays where you see flashes of it, man. Like I said, after the game, you know, I definitely thought without looking at the film that there were some high points out there from, you know, individuals and as a whole. But just too many low points that was it just kept us out the game.
Now that you've seen the film, were there some high points out there?
Oh, most definitely, you know, from, like I said, from individual play and from the team. And, you know, it's just that we got to just play 60 minutes. You know, the unfortunate thing about being in this league in the secondary is that you can play 59 plays well, but those two plays that you don't play, you know, can cost you a game, or, you know, it could be a big turning point. And I think that was you know, that was very evident on Sunday.
As a group, what can you guys do to find consistency, steps to get there?
Everybody be their own leader. Everybody step it up in their own individual way, whether it's in their practice habits, their film habits, or basically just in the game. You know, when it comes down to it, relying on your techniques and just playing ball, you know. Like I said, you can go out there and have the greatest game ever, but if you give up two plays out there that cost the game, you know, you're considered a loser.
Ron, you said last week the secondary is a work in progress. How do you guys make progress?
Well, you know, I'll let Rodney speak for that. You know, I think it is too. I think we're you know, a unit that can continually trying to get better. Obviously, we got some things we need to work on, but, you know, it's nothing that can't be fixed. You know, we just got to keep moving forward.
What particular problems does Denver's offense present that your guys will have to solve?
They just open the field up. You know, down the field. across the field, sideline to sideline, running game and passing game. They're all over the place.
Last year you guys lost just one game, and that was the Super Bowl. You've lost two now. What's the feeling?
07 means nothing. 08 is a totally different entity. 07 means nothing. What you saw last year is something few and far between. You just don't have seasons like that all the time, man. It was a special moment. It is what it is, but that was 07. You know, for the records, we got to quit comparing 07 to 08 because you just don't see things like that. I mean, look around the league, how much more competitive is around the league now where, you know, teams are that much more close together where you're seeing all these close games. Guys are literally fighting it out on the last play, the last kick, one crucial play within a series, you know. Yeah, last year is last year, and I'm pretty sure I'm not going to see another one like that in my career. Great example, man. So, you know, to sit here and keep trying to compare that, man, is we're just spinning our wheels with that one.
Good to be back home after the extended time in the West.
Yeah, it feels good to be in my bed, man. I didn't go to bed. I think the California time hit me just yesterday. I didn't go to bed till 5 this morning. I was just staring at the wall. Didn't take any medicine or nothing. I should have, but, it definitely feels good to get back home, man. Like I said, come off the road, you know, disappointing loss. We got one. But, it just feels good to get off the road.
What makes Marshall a Royal Danger?
Mike Vrabel.
All right, tell us what you know about Denver to this point.
Well, I mean, I think coming in here this morning and taking a look at them, very, very high-powered offense. I mean, you know, they get a lot of guys the ball. Good skill players, real good skill players. I mean, they run all the backs. Their backs are averaging over 5 yards a carry. You know, Cutler's getting the ball downfield. You know, Brandon Marshall and Royal are, you know, tough to bring down after they catch the ball. So they got two good tight ends, and, you know, the offensive line is starting to work and figure that scheme out.
With his arm and you guys being beaten deep a couple times, did you logical assumption of?
Oh, I mean, I would imagine that, you know, any time in this league that, you know, people have had success with you, certain plays or certain, you know, schemes, you're going to see it until you can correct it. That's just how it works.
What are you guys working on this week to try to correct those?
I mean, we've been here for 6 hours, so, I mean, talk to us later in the week.
Mike, it's been a long time since you guys have lost 2 hours of career right now. How important is this game? Ellis Alves saying it's just as important to you guys like San Diego's game was to them last week.
Well, I mean, you only get 16 opportunities, so they're all important, to be honest with you. So, you know, whether we've lost 2 out of 3 or 1 out of 3, they're all important. And, you know, you got to put a lot into it, and you got to go out and play well. Ultimately, that's what it's about. It's about preparation, but you got to go out and make plays on the field. Thanks, guys.
Tell Tony.
What happened there?
Oh, man, they tried to take a shot. It was a good call for them, you know. As a corner coming in, you would never expect that on the first play. So it was a good call.
Locked up in a man on that one?
Somewhat, yeah, but you know, it was a good call on their part. You know, just fortunate that I got him down. He didn't score because it would have really been embarrassing. So, yeah, but just a good play.
Delta, when you look at the film, you know how, you know what you're saying. It's never as bad as you think it is, or never as good as you think it is. What did you see?
Actually, I got a chance to get the ball. You know, I had a chance to get the ball out of his hand, but, you know, he fell on his back, so it just fell right in his lap. So, you know, I just saw that they just made a good play, and I didn't.
Did you feel like they targeted you? Did you feel targeted that
game? Early. Yeah, I could say early in the game. I was in great position to make a play. They just came out with the ball, you know. And my experience being in the NFL, 9 times out of 10, if I'm that close to the ball, I'm either picking it or knocking it down. So, you know, good job on that part.
It's a copycat league. Do you expect more teams to air it out and come after you guys?
Almost definitely. Until we get it stopped, yeah, that's what you got to expect. So, you know, we're going to work hard at that, of course, and, you know, just keep trying to push to put W's up.
How did you feel after that game?
I felt embarrassed. You know, I felt down. I felt, you know, there was things I could have did that probably could have changed or made the outcome of the game differently. But you know, I'm my worst critic. So, you know, I sat there and thought about it these past couple of days, that whole flight home, you know, and I'm over it now. It's just one game.
Yeah,
you say anything to the team or to your teammates?
You know, I talked to a couple of my corners, and, you know, they you know, helped me out on the plane. You know, they don't worry about it. It happens. At least you didn't just get blown away. You know, you was right there, which is true. And, you know, it happens. That's part of it. I look at it, they get paid too, you know. My job is don't make it happen. Don't make it a reoccurring event, you know. Try to stop that from happening.
Looking for some redemption Monday?
Almost definitely. Almost definitely. You know, they got some good receivers over there. So, you know, it's going to be another challenge.
What have you seen out of those receivers?
Good receivers. They're big. Well, Marshall's big. He's good at catching the ball and running. After catching the ball, running with it. You know, and the quarterback has a strong arm. You know, they're in sync right now. So it'll be a good challenge for the secondary.
Thank you.